Welcome to the online ministry of Pacific Beach United Methodist Church, located in beautiful San Diego, California. Pacific Beach UMC is a member of the Reconciling Ministries Network and welcomes persons of all ages and backgrounds for worship, study, and service opportunities. More information can be found on our website at pbumc.org. May you be enriched in the hearing of these words, and may you receive and enjoy God's blessing.
So this series through January, we'll be talking about the power of words. And just to tell you sort of how we're going to manage that over the course of these next 4 weeks, today we're going to be talking about the power of words, particularly, I'll focus on schools and kids being picked on, being bullied. But really it applies, I think, sort of to kids in school, but also I think it applies to us vocationally, because I think sometimes it can continue. I would suggest that kids are a bit more vulnerable to bullying than adults, with some exception, and I see a shaking head, and I'll take that. Because I think bullying, and really one of the ways that we've particularly seen bullying, particularly among adults, is treatment of women, and that's something that's been in the press a lot lately. So that's certainly something, so thank you. I think part of what we can explore today is being picked on, bullying in school and vocational and other settings. So that's sort of the focus for today. Next week, we'll talk about the power of words in our family settings. The following week, we'll talk about the power of words in politics. Sometimes I get a little bit of pushback for sometimes skating the line a little bit when it comes to politics. And I want you to know I'm really sensitive to that. I really try to be aware of that. But I'm not willing to just leave it out entirely, because I would say that Jesus was intensely political. And sometimes it's important to speak truths without advocating particular parties or people or whatever, but to talk about particular things. And I think there's value in doing that. And so that'll be the third week. We'll talk about the power of words in politics. And then the final week in January, we'll talk about the power of words in terms of our relationship with God. So that's the way this week focused on schools and vocations, sort of culture in a way. Next week, the power of words in families. The following week, the power of words in politics. And the final week, the power of words in our relationship with God. So that's sort of what we're doing. I talked with the kids a little bit this morning about some of their experiences of being picked on, of being bullied. And I wasn't sure sort of what I was going to get out of the kids. I got to say that for my own growing up, I didn't get picked on that much. I was a kid, my birthday's in October, so I was among the youngest kids in my class all the time, which could have set me up for some of that, except that like I'm a big guy, and I was always among the taller people in my class. And so, even in late elementary school, when the girls all shoot up and the guys are still short, like even then, I was among the tallest people in my class. So I really didn't have to deal with any of those things. I grew up in neighborhoods where I looked like most of the people who were around me. I was a boy, and boys tended to get picked on less. I was tall, and there's a certain amount of privilege that you get when you're tall, as long as you're not too tall. So, like I said, I didn't get picked on that much. And so that's why it was important to me that I asked the kids about their experiences of being picked on, about being bullying. But I did one other thing to try to come to an understanding. It's been within the last 24 hours that I posted on a couple of different social media sites, tell me your stories of bullying or being bullied. I didn't expect the responses that I got from people that I know and love who had experiences that I was completely unaware of. And over the last 24 hours, as I've been reading some of these responses, I've been moved to tears because of the way people have been treated. Like, I don't understand it. And I want to share some of these with you because, you know, I grew up in a house where what I was told was, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, right? Before I read these, here's my phone. I left my phone over here. I did a quick Google search this morning of two words, suicide and bullying. And here's the first few headlines. from 3 hours ago in the Seattle Times. School district changes bullying policy after child suicide. 2 days ago, bullying drove South Carolina boy to kill himself, mother says. State agents are investigating. 3 days ago, mom shares heartbreaking story after bullied 12-year-old commits suicide. 2 days ago, Logan Paul and the glamorization of suicide. I'm just reading through these top headlines, these top hits. Let's see. 2 days ago, family of bullied teen who committed suicide sues magnet school. Don't tell me that words don't have power. Because kids are killing themselves. Kids are killing themselves. Don't tell me that words don't have power. But it's not just kids. Young adults are being bullied in terrible ways. Women are being sexually harassed today. Don't tell me that words don't have power. But again, this got personal for me when I shared this post on Facebook and Twitter. Here's what I said. Informal research. Tell me your stories about bullying or being bullied. From a friend that I used to work with up in the LA area. I was bullied 5th and 6th grade. She tortured me, threatened me every day. In several occasions, she'd pull my hair and kick me in the back simultaneously. My teacher walked me home, but nothing else was done. Another friend, we met in a musical circle. She says, when I was in 2nd grade, a kid threw a cactus at me, hit me in the face. 5th and 6th grade, I was tormented by the popular girls. Nothing was ever done, even though the teachers were well aware of the problem. High school years constantly picked on. I have many, many stories. Another friend, between 5th grade and 9th grade, my life was a living nightmare of torment. Teachers knew and didn't care. A few of them even encouraged the bullying. Sadly for me, it wasn't just one or two kids. Some days it felt like everyone was against me. Didn't happen just at school either. Kids in the neighborhood and even at my church. Another person, I spent much of junior high being bullied for being different. Oddly, I wonder if the other students had known about my autism or if I had known back then, maybe I might have been left alone or bullied more. I remember eating a lot of lunches alone and being picked on. This one from a dear friend of ours. She writes this, just quoting directly. Fat girl. Wanted desperately to be liked. Lack of inclusion. Mean comments. Teachers never did anything. High school was an entirely different dimension. One boy liked to slap me in front of his friends. There's a story, I won't read the whole thing because it's kind of long, a story about a woman who is a bus driver who I was told by another bus driver about a kid being picked on. And the particular policies in that school district are that, you know, the kids get some sort of write-up and they have to apologize and that's it. They're back to it over and over and over again. What brought this to this bus driver's attention is that the kid being picked on began talking about suicide. There's so many here, I can't read them all. This is from a friend of mine who I got to know when I was part of a local community theater up near LA. He says, I was a theater and choir kid all through high school. Additionally, I was on the morning announcements in the school. To top it off, I went to high school at a staggering 4'11.5" tall. I'm going to continue reading, I'm quoting directly from him. He uses a word that I don't like, but I'm going to read it because it has impact. He says, I was called gay and or fag pretty much every day at school. One of the kids was someone I played basketball with in 8th grade. In my gym class, there was a group of guys that would try to trip or even tackle me during the runs. They only succeeded once. I fell on the dirt track, skinned my hands and my hip pretty good. I remember one day in the locker room hearing them say that they were going to set my hair on fire, and then I heard a lighter click behind my ear. This one from a member of this congregation. He says, I remember moving from San Diego to Montana when I was 12. I wore my pink high-top Converse shoes the first day of 7th grade. By the way, I call that an excellent fashion choice. He says that didn't go so well. From another dear friend, she's an attorney up in the Santa Clarita Valley area. She says, try being 6 foot tall and female in elementary school. And finally, this from my sister. She says, I was bullied in kindergarten and 1st grade because my mom died. She came up to me one day and asked if I was going to make a card for Mother's Day for my mother and then quickly responded, oh yeah, you can't. You don't have a mom. Don't tell me that words don't have power. Don't tell me that words don't have power. But we have a choice. We have a choice every time we speak. We have a choice every time we use words, whether it's in a spoken conversation, whether it's in an email, whether it's in a letter that we send, whether it's on social media. We have a choice every single time that we use words. And here's the choice. In my mind, here's what the choice is. We can choose to build people up or we can choose to tear them down. We can choose to build people up or we can choose to tear them down. And every single time we use words, every single time we make that choice. We make that choice whether we do it consciously or not. Every single time we use words, we make that choice. Every time. And we can tear people down or we can build them up. But we make the choice. And these choices have consequences. These choices have consequences in the way that people are taking their lives. I'm particularly aware of this in a congregation like this that welcomes gay, lesbian, transgender persons in all levels of leadership and life in the church. But my friends, it sure seems like those who are gay and lesbian and transgender are those one who are particularly picked on and who are particularly susceptible to suicide. There's one thing I want to say. I said this to the kids, but I want to say it here. If you, regardless of your age, if you are being picked on, if you are being bullied, there's hope and there's light. Some of that hope and light comes from the people in this room. I tell you this, I will stand up with and for every single one of you. And I know that there are people in this room who will do the same thing. There is strength and courage that comes from the God who created the universe. It's possible to get through it. It doesn't mean it's easy. It is not. And it's possible. And there is light, and there is love, and there is hope that is possible. Now, this use of words is not new to us here in 2017. In fact, James, who is, many scholars would say, the brother of Jesus, wrote quite a bit about this in the book of James. He likened the tongue to a rudder that steers a ship, right? This small piece of a ship that steers this enormous thing. He also likened a rudder to a bit in a horse's mouth, this, you know, little piece of metal that steers this big, magnificent creature. And then he writes something else that I think that we must hear anew today. This is from the book of James, and I'll ask Scott to read for us what James has to say about the tongue.
James chapter 3, verses 7 through 10. People can tame and already have tamed every kind of animal, bird, reptile, and fish. No one can tame the tongue, though. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it, we both bless the Lord and Father and curse human beings made in God's likeness. Blessing and cursing come from the same mouth. My brothers and sisters, it just shouldn't be this way.
Thank you, Scott. In ancient Jewish teachings, as I recall, it's written in the Talmud, ancient Jewish teachings say that the tongue is so dangerous that it has to have two walls, both the teeth and the lips. Wow, I agree. Hear this text from Ephesians, and I want to read this because I want you all to read it with me. In fact, I'm going to invite you, maybe on the back of your bulletin, just write down this reference, Ephesians 4:29. I would invite you to think about whether or not you might want to memorize this text. But right now, let's read it together. We'll get it up on the screen, and let's read this text together. This is Ephesians 4:29. There we go. It goes like this. Well, I'm sorry. Read it with me. Don't let any foul words come out of your mouth. Only say what is helpful when it is needed for building up the community so that it benefits those who hear what you say. There's that word. Let's leave this up there for a minute. There's that word that's translated as foul. Other translations translate it as evil. I want to give you a sense of like what we can get out of that word. Because, you know, ancient Greek and English don't necessarily translate directly. here's the image I'd like for you to have for that particular word, foul or evil. I want you to imagine the worst experience you've ever had cleaning out a refrigerator. I have a friend, she's the associate pastor up at La Jolla United Methodist Church. She's only been there a few months. She does a lot of work, but part of what she does is she works with the youth up there. They have this nice youth room, and it has its own refrigerator in there. And shortly after she got there, she realized that there was a smell coming from the refrigerator. And she decided that it was time to clean that out. And apparently there were some unspeakable things in the back of that refrigerator. Maybe you've experienced that kind of thing. That kind of putridity is what we're talking about in this word that's translated as foul or evil. Here's another thing to think about. While we're on this page, I heard a story recently about someone who found an old Tupperware in the back of a car. Like, found it in the back of the car. Like, gosh, I don't know how long it's been there. Like, the kind of Tupperware found in the back of the car that still had a little bit of food in it that you're afraid to open it, and then you just throw away the whole Tupperware. Yeah. That's the idea that we're talking about. Don't let any foul words come out of your mouth, because that kind of language, when we use words to tear people down, that's foul. I would identify that as evil. It has this putridity to it. But instead, say what is helpful when it's needed for building up in the community so that it benefits those who hear what you say. Now, here's another way to think about that. First, this is the first of John Wesley's three simple rules. First, do no harm. My mom said it to me this way. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Yeah? Yeah, everybody's mom said that? Okay, good. All right, good. Huh. First, do no harm. When Paul was writing this text, this letter to the church in Ephesus, he'd started that church and then spent some time really pastoring that congregation, and then went away, continued his travels, but got word that they were messing up. That not only were they not quite following the teachings, Jesus' teachings that he'd passed down, but also they were picking on each other. They were being harmful to each other. They were lying to each other. And Paul calls them out on it and talks about, in this verse, he talks about the importance of how they were treating one another, talks about the importance of the words. Don't let any foul words come out of your mouth. Only say what is helpful when it is needed for building up the community so that it benefits those who hear what you say. Paul highlights that very same choice. Every time we use words, we can choose to use them to tear down, or we can choose to use them to build up. And even when we don't make that choice, we're making that choice. I read to you several examples of how words tear people down, but I'd like to tell you a story about words that build somebody up. There's a teacher, she used to teach not far from where I grew up, Moore Park Community College, a music teacher, so yay for musicians, because the story works out well, and she was teaching a music theory class at this local junior college, and the way she writes, I found this story on the web, and it's written from her perspective. Her name is, I'm sorry, I have to look it up here at the top of the page. Her name is Audrey Hunt. And she says that this story happened in roughly the 1970s. There was a particular student that she names Edward. I don't know if that's the student's name, but that she names this student Edward. And Edward was one of those people, especially those of you who are students, I'm sorry, those of you who are teachers might have an understanding of students like this. Edward was the kind of student who didn't seem fully engaged in the class in such a way that he was living up to his his potential. He, like, the work that he turned in didn't seem to match his personality. Didn't seem, there seemed to be a disconnect in there somewhere. Now, Edward often showed up to class pretty disheveled, often was wearing the same clothes for several classes in a row and things like that. Edward sometimes seemed a bit unclean. And so this was who Edward was in this class. Well, it came to near the end of the class, and this teacher was feeling a little bit concerned for Edward because he was getting a pretty low grade in the class. He was getting a D in the class. And really, his only hope for passing the class was to get a pretty good grade on the final. Now, she was a teacher who had a tendency to make sure that students knew all throughout the class sort of where they stood, where they were in terms of their grades. And as I understand it, she had let Edward know, you need to do well on this final, and even had a thought as she was passing out the final, particularly to Edward, I really hope that he does well on this. She really wanted for him to succeed. Well, all the students took the final and then turned him in and went home, and she graded all the finals, and Edward did not do well on the final and was going to end up getting a D in the class, which was, not good for him academically. Now, the way this teacher shared grades at the end of the semester was she had sort of a window of time, and all the students would show up and in turn have a one-on-one short conversation with this teacher. They'd all come in, and she'd say, here's your final back, here's the grade you got on the final, and with that, here's the grade that you'll have in my class. This is the grade that you've earned in my class. And so this window of time came and went, and Edward never showed up. And so she made the decision that she was going to go home, and she was locking up her office door when she heard footsteps behind her, and she turned around and she saw Edward. He apologized for being late and asked if they could chat for a minute so he could get his final grade. And then he, trembling, spoke to her. And he said this, he said, I know that I'm getting a low grade on my final. I realize that I've not been participating in class and that I'm an embarrassment to others. Excuse me.
Plenty of things over here to help. Good. I'm sorry, just one more minute.
We're saying, gosh, wasn't he sick on Christmas Eve? Is he sick again? No, still. Let me start over with what Edward said. She quotes him in this article. He says, I know that I'm getting a low grade on my final. I realize that I've been participating in class and that I'm an embarrassment to others. I'm lazy, selfish, stupid, and an... I'm lazy, selfish, stupid, and an ugly, no good for anything person. My hands before communion. All morning till just now. He continues, I have no place on this earth, and what's more, no one can ever love a person like me. I'm a hopeless case with absolutely no future. Sorry, this thing really ruins the mood. Can you imagine hearing those words from a person who says those things about himself? And one of the things I would hear in my mind, or at least one of the things that I would think in my mind, is those aren't his words, those are words that he's been told. And if he believes those words, then those are words that he's been told for a long time. Well, here's what that teacher did. She knew that Edward had earned a D in her class. So she said, Edward, your grade in my class is an A. It's not because you've earned an A. It's because you are an A human being. He was astonished. He said, why would you give me an A when I did such a poor job in class on my assignments and on the final exam? Why would you do that? And she responded in this way. She said, you may appear to be a D student, but you're an A person. I believe in you now, and I will always believe in you. I am here for you now, and I will always be here for you. Never, ever forget that. Now, go and create the life you dream of. Believe in yourself. I will be watching. And by the way, Edward, I love you. Edward left. He didn't go home right away, and the only reason she knew that is because she got a phone call late that night from the priest of Eric's family. She was a little astonished to be getting a call from a priest in the middle of the night. Priest said, I don't know what you said to Edward, but you changed his life. See, apparently sometime between the time that Eric left her office and was away for a while and then finally got home, somewhere in that time, his family found a note that he had written and left on the pillow in his bedroom, apologizing. Apologizing for not being the kind of son that he should be. Apologizing for not being the kind of brother that he should be. Saying, I hope that I haven't been too much of a burden, too much trouble for you. He wrote, you'll find me in the closet. Please cremate my body. And when they looked in the closet, they found a rope hanging there, waiting for Edward. But the priest said something you said changed him. And Edward, in that time between leaving her office and finally arriving home to his family, decided that he wanted to live. You see, my friend, this teacher chose to use her words to lift up rather than tear down. And I feel depressed sometimes when I look at the news and I see how many people are so badly bullied, who receive such violent words. I really think that it's verbal violence. Who receive such violent words that they can't take it anymore. They feel like they're completely unloved and unsupported. Those who feel like the only thing in their life, because they believe the words that they're told, is to end it. I think that there are also instances where people use this power of words to build up. And I believe, my friends, that that's our call. I believe that we must realize that every single time we use our words, we can make that choice. And I believe that God calls us to use words to build up every single time. Now, we're not going to be perfect at it. I would suggest that every single one of us struggles with this. I do. But I also believe that God empowers us, that God calls us, that God strengthens us to use our words in every single case to build up. And that is my prayer for us, for this congregation, for this community, for this city, for this state, for this country, for this world, that we do everything in our power to use our words to build up, to use words that embody the Christ who teaches us to love, who gives us a new commandment to love one another, who, when he's asked about the most important commandment, says it's to love God with everything you have and to love your neighbor as you love yourself. If there is a single word that embodies the Gospels, if there's a single word that embodies the Bible, if there's a single word that embodies Christ, if there's a single word that embodies God, if there's a single word that is the Holy Spirit, it is love. I invite you, I implore you to use your words to build up. To build up those who already hear words that tear them down. To avoid the opportunity, because we all have the opportunity to use our words to tear down. In everything we say, in every way that we use words, use them to build up. I believe it's God's commandment for us. Amen. Friends, I invite you to join me in the spirit of prayer. And as you may recall, on the first Sunday of the month when we serve Holy Communion, instead of speaking the Lord's Prayer, we'll sing the Lord's Prayer. And you'll be led through how to do that if you're not familiar with it. Join me in prayer. Holy and gracious God, we are grateful for your guidance, for your strength, for your compassion, and for your love. As we seek to be people who embody your words of love and care in all things, give us the strength, the courage to do just that. We lift up all these things and any that are left unsaid as we join together in song, singing our Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day in heaven.